Hey, thanks so much for listening to the Ridge Community Church podcast. My name is John. I'm one of the pastors on staff at the Ridge, and our vision is to bring the hope of Jesus into every home. So as a piece of that, our goal each week is to bring you something that's hopeful and helpful. So subscribe to this podcast to make sure you don't miss any hopeful and helpful conversations. Hey, everyone, and thanks for listening to this episode of the Ridge podcast. If you find today's episode hopeful and helpful, then please follow or subscribe and then rate and review so that more people can find the conversation. If you're watching on YouTube, be sure to give us a follow and turn on your notifications. Now, today, I get to share with all of you a conversation that I had with the creative pastor at the Ridge, Evan Schwartz. Evan has been married for 17 years to his wife, Carrie, and he shares some of the most helpful things from his marriage. This is my conversation with Evan. Hey, Evan, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Absolutely. I love spending time with you, John.
Ooh, and because feelings you're, mutual.
Because you're somewhere else, you know, I'm grateful that we have these means to have these conversations together. Thank you.
All the digital means. Other places. Originally from Chicago, you are. That was a little bit of Yoda right there. But
2 hours straight south of Chicago.
Gotcha. Okay. So now that you live in Milwaukee, I got to ask you, what is your favorite thing about Milwaukee?
That's hard to say. I will tell you that. So when we moved here last year, it was like straight up like a year ago from now. If you're listening right now, that would be the beginning of April. And when we got here, it was like the tail end of Wisconsin winter, which is winter everywhere else, but Wisconsin winter is its own special little thing. And I think there was maybe one more little snow that we endured. But, you know, being fresh here, everything was new. You didn't really know the feelings and everything. It was just like, this is what it is. So now, having been here for a full year, and Wisconsin winter did its usual thing, like, gave you a day or two in February where it was like, here's hope, here's light, here's the sun, and then just pulls it away just as quickly as it came. Yeah. And then you do several more weeks, like Punxsutawney Phil doesn't even come messing around in Wisconsin. It's like, no, we're doing six more weeks and then some, okay?
You do realize that I asked you what your favorite part of Wisconsin was.
I'm getting there. It's, you can't know how good is until you've seen how bad is, right?
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
So last Monday on eclipse day, it was like 50 some degrees. And I was like, you know what? I'm wearing shorts. And there was just something different in my spirit. Like, I will say one of the best things about Wisconsin, I feel joy like welling up in my soul from the depths that is, it's not so cold anymore. And man, I'm ready for Milwaukee summer. People call it Milwaukee summer, right? Like it's just, even if you're in the sun, but if you're hanging out in the shade at a local beer garden, live music outside, you know, tons of fun to be had with friends outside, like Milwaukee summer is pretty awesome. So I'm going to say hi on that. You got baseball, you got cookouts, you got hanging out with friends. It's all there. It's great.
It does. I mean, Milwaukee summer really is hard to beat. You know, my favorite thing about the summer, and it's such a West Coast thing, I think, but it's like the fireflies. There's just like this magic of fireflies. I remember my first time seeing them and being like, oh, these are real. This isn't just some like movie TV show like prank or joke or something that they've just been collectively pulling on everybody else. Like, no, this is
some
a real life
scientific phenomenon.
Exactly. Well, there's something cool about the like there's like a magical element to their like where you're, I don't know, it was definitely a moment of wow, God made this, you know. And oh, it's cool that. When those little moments kind of peek through.
Yeah.
Okay, so you mentioned that you and your family moved here a year ago. Would you mind just sharing a little bit about who is your family?
Yeah. So, hello, Evan here, creative pastor at the Ridge Community Church. My wife, Carrie, we have been married it's not about not knowing the number. It's about doing quick math in your head. So we got married in the summer of 2007. So this July will be 17 years.
Wow.
Quick math.
Yeah.
She is awesome. Love my wife to death. And we have three kids, 12, 10, and 6. We live in West Allis, New Berlin. We're kind of like on that weird in between the two. We really love our community. We're zoned to West Allis schools. And my wife is an accountant. I obviously work at the church. I have been substitute teaching, not for financial purposes. If you wanted to make money on the side, you'd do other things that are more rewarding and less stressful.
Yeah.
But I say rewarding in the sense of like, if you wanted to make, go do something. It has honestly been really, really rewarding. And this getting an opportunity to invest in your community in really cool ways. Not for the faint of heart. Teachers in your local community are working hard, I will tell you.
What age range are you substitute teaching for?
I'm in both elementary and junior high. Somebody asked me over the weekend, like, I would assume that elementary would be easier. It's not that one is easier. They present challenges all their own, you know?
Yeah.
So a couple weeks ago, I did junior high art for an afternoon.
Ooh.
And so I had eighth grade classes and sixth grade classes, both with different dynamics to them. I was a junior high boy once. I was just as stupid. So I level with some of the idiocy.
I saw a spade right there, man.
Yeah. You know, yeah. I was there. I understand why you're doing and saying the things that you are, but don't do that.
Yeah.
What I have been doing in the elementary school is I've been doing several opportunities as a teacher's aide. So that's where, you know, a teacher has a full classroom, class sizes vary, but, you know, they're not rotating. They have them for a full day. And there are probably a handful of kids in most classes that just need an extra hand, you know, hard concentrating, you know, for them to fully complete some of the work that they're working on. They really need like some one-on-one care.
Yeah.
And that's been interesting. There's one kid I've spent full days with. And he's a doozy. He's a real doozy.
I won't make you name names. Yeah.
No name, but yeah. He is fun. I misunderstood an assignment this last week that we were supposed to work on together. It was like read this thing. And so he handed me this book and I was like, oh, this is the thing we're supposed to read. Bro, this is a long book. Like this took forever. And we finished it only to come back and find out that I was only supposed to read like a half page thing with him.
Ooh.
But
well, they're ahead.
He was bought in on this story. Like he was hanging on my every word in this story. It was a very thrilling story.
Yeah. Like I know that each and every one of us throughout the rest of this podcast will be equally attentive, hanging on to every word of wisdom that you share as we dive into a cool topic where we are chatting about marriage and what can we do to have, you know, the best relationship we can possibly with our spouse. And whether that's somebody right now you're listening and you are married or you someday you hope to become married, I hope this conversation is really helpful. We've been in this series called Relationships on Purpose, and it's just been really cool to talk about how when you put intent into a relationship, it can kind of change the dynamic. And so as Evan and I were chatting just about this kind of series in general, we got talking about the topic of marriage. And Evan, you mentioned kind of three different words that kind of, I believe you said were some of the most helpful things and aspects of your marriage. And after being married for 17 years, I'm sure you've picked up a few tricks throughout that time. And just curious, what were those three words? And maybe you could share a little bit about why they've been impactful.
Well, as you were talking, I thought of a fourth word.
Okay. Unvetted. So really just going to trust you with this fourth word.
And it's part of one of the words anyway, so it's fine. You know, they all mesh together. Mm. I first want to preface and make sure that everyone knows that as it pertains to having a conversation about anything, frankly, but let's say particularly about marriage, and you were looking for, let's talk with the experts. I don't know what has happened that has left it to where I'm the one now participating in this conversation. Everyone else has fallen through, is my but nonetheless, I'm here and have been married going on 17 years and would love to talk about it. The best I can offer is experience. That's it. And I've heard great stories asking, you know, just you and I being married in our respective relationships, you know, you go around asking, like, what's the trick for people that set an example in your lives, people that you look up to that have been married a long time, set a great example. If you ever have the opportunity to ask that question of people that have been married a really long time, just asking, what's the trick? Like, what did you do? So I'll tell you the story of one of my favorite couples that I looked up to and their answer, and that's one of the words. Should we kick off there?
Ooh, yes. What was the story? Do you want to give the word first, or will the story bring it out?
I'll bring it out of the story.
Ooh, okay. Yes. A-plus storytelling.
Got the great opportunity early in ministry to meet and come alongside a couple that had been in ministry themselves, I think, 40 plus years.
Oh, wow.
They started in New York City with their own church. I believe they were on Long Island, and started a church planting organization. And eventually we're leading this church planting organization that had, I don't know, dozens of churches in the New York City area. And so by the time we met them, they were long retired, several years, and just happened to go to the church that I worked at, and we did some life alongside each other. And just amazing people. Like, when you get around them, like, you knew you were around such great people. Like, they were all about telling amazing stories, and they had so much wisdom to give. And so I think I attended, we attended together a party that was for their 70th wedding anniversary.
Whoa.
And so I loved hanging out with them anyway. Woman of this marriage was so kind and sweet. And whenever you would visit, she always wanted to make sure you had like a sweet tea to drink, you know, all that kind of stuff. And the guy, just an ornery cuss. I mean, he was in preaching ministry for years and years and years, and now in old age wanted to live out all of his orneriness that he couldn't earlier in life. And he was very fun to be around. You knew that he was, he liked you when he made fun of you. We may talk about love languages. His love language was zing. He was zinging you all the time. So they were asked at their, I'm pretty sure it was their 70th wedding anniversary, you know, what is the secret to a long marriage? And their one word answer was laughter. Fun and laughter. We've talked about fun on the podcast before.
Yeah.
And as they dug into it, they were basically just saying, life is hard. Marriage is hard. You will face challenges. You will have days when you're at each other. There will be plenty of days when you don't like each other. And they will come and go. You won't even know when they're coming. And it will happen. And they said the thing that kept them going was finding opportunities to laugh as often as humanly possible. And so I would assume that they tried to find ways to be intentional about that. Like, how can we ensure that we're always laughing, either at ourselves or with other people? So to take some of that sting of all of the serious effects of life, the day-to-day life that we'll live, it will take its toll. Take it back with laughter. Yeah.
So you're in the audience and you're in the group, right? And you're hearing this be shared. And I'm sure like so many people, like everybody hears advice at some point or another, right? You hear something. And then I feel like there's a moment where you either like internalize that or try to practice that, or you kind of just like, that's a good thing to say and kind of let it float off into the wind, you know?
Yeah.
The fact that this is stuck with you tells me that, okay, this is something that you actually began to incorporate into your relationship with Carrie. How did you do that? Was that an intentional thing? I know you're a fun guy, insert your mushroom jokes here. All the dads just laughed and everybody else died a little inside. But like, I'm sure that it's like, okay, how do you make that a priority? So how, what was your process for like beginning to like put that into practice?
I'm not sure if there's like some really big intentional things that took place. I don't think it came from this, but I've often said the phrase, laugh so you don't cry. Like there's going to be many reasons to be upset and cry about things. But I think part of that element of not taking life too seriously is finding a way to laugh. Like, you know, you just got in a fender bender and guess what? It was your fault. You weren't paying attention. And it's just like, you know, you could go all road rage crazy with that, or you could just be like, you have got to be kidding me. Like, this is what would happen in my day, isn't it? I bet even my text to Carrie or call for that would be like, I guess you can't guess what I did today. filed an insurance claim.
The little joys in life.
Yeah. So I'm trying to think of like some little things that I do. We try to be intentional about eating around the dinner table, as a family.
Yeah.
We lead really busy lives. Our kids are in activities after school and all that stuff, but that's a really important time to us. So I would say at least 2 to 3 days a week, we try to get around the dinner table as best we can. And I started making a playlist because it's twofold. One, I really hate the sound of mouth eating. It's disgusting. I can't stand it. And so I'll put music on while we're eating. And having music on while you're making dinner as well is really great. But I call this playlist Dinner Funk. And my kids probably hate all these songs, or they're going to take them later in life and just be like, oh, I'm hungry now, or this makes me feel good. But they're just like songs from the 60s, 70s, and 80s that are just feel good, have fun, have a blast. And I always put on that playlist during dinner. Now, the kids try to change it from time to time, and we'll play some T-Swift. That's fine. our youngest has some songs that are really annoying, but they're funny, that he likes to put on. And we're like, no, please not that song. But you'll allow it because they're expressing themselves, whatever. Dinner funk. It's like we've all had a hard day. We like to say around the table, like, what's your highs and lows? What was your favorite part of the day today? And well, there'll be some low parts of the day, but we've got like some fun music. We're together, you know, trying to have fun all together as best we can. I don't know. There's always a reason to get upset about things. I'm going to be the first person to apply a joke to any conversation. I don't know. There's always something to laugh about. Try to find it. And my wife and I laugh. Often it's usually at me, but it is good to laugh.
You know, I think one of the principles that comes out there is just this idea of having a moment where you can decompress. Like you mentioned the intensity of, essentially the intensity of life sometimes. And not being afraid to run from the hard things is important, but also knowing when the hard thing doesn't need to have its place in that moment. Mm. Instead, just allowing yourself to take a breath and experience all the other things that are happening too, besides just that hard thing. And I think that's one of the key things about being willing to laugh and have a good time. And you mentioned not taking yourself too seriously. I think that's rooted in this concept of like, there are bigger things than this mistake or this hardship. You know, I have a distinct memory of seeing somebody when I was young. I think their significant other like dropped a plate or something. And the instant reaction wasn't to see if they were okay. It was like, oh my gosh, you dropped the, why were you not paying attention? You know what I mean? Like that was the reaction. And I think that goes into the little bit, I'm not critiquing their situation, but I'm just saying that to me showcases this, like in that moment, what was the most important thing to them? I think that the laughter principle showcases this kind of underlying thing of like, not everything you deal with is the most serious thing in the world. And it's okay to take a breath. It's okay to see the big picture. And I love that. I love the like, man, guess what happened to me today? So I love that.
I'm using that story because it's true. I did it. Yeah. Totally backed into somebody at the Costco parking lot.
Yeah.
With a child with me. It was great. Loved
Perfect.
It.
Perfect. Yeah. That's an opportunity to, what a little opportunity to experience laughter at your own expense. There you go. A little twist that light there. Okay. So laughter. What's your second word?
So I'll put words two and three together. Fourth word kind of plays in with those. I even said the word, I'm not a preacher. This is not how you deliver. These would be three or four words that all have the same first letter.
Right.
And it even makes an acronym itself. Yeah. Like
maybe it will. So, we'll find out.
I don't know. The other two words would be selflessness and humility. Mm-hmm. And I'll throw that fourth word in, intentionality. Everybody's wired a little bit differently. My personality, if you're all about personality shapings, whether that be Myers-Briggs, 16 personalities, Enneagram, whatever it may be, they have some similarities to them, some dissimilarities. Say you're an Enneagram person, I'm an Enneagram 2. So I'm often dubbed the helper or the console. And I would call it like the ultimate empath. Like my empathy is way, way high. And when I see someone that I carry, that I care about, I said my wife's name, going through something, what my mind does, I have a propensity for thinking there's something that I need to be doing. You know, there's something that I have a role to play in what someone else is feeling. The unhealthy part of the ultimate empath, the console, would be I know better than the other person what they need from me rather than them telling me what I need. That's the unhealthy version.
I'm I know sure that never comes up.
Oh, yeah. No, never. Never happens. Yeah. When it comes to selflessness and humility, I would just say that fleshes out in my life, and I think it's really important in marriages. If you start from a foundation in marriage that says there are things that I need, there are things that I want, that's a pretty terrible foundation to work from.
What do you mean by that? You mean like you're going into it with essentially like is that like a self focus?
Yeah. You know, if your foundation in your marriage is what you get out of it, that's a cracked foundation. I would say it's doomed eventually at some point, because we are human. We disappoint each other often. It matters what happens, what you do when you face some of that disappointment. And I think an attitude within a marriage relationship that says, there are things that I want and need, but I value what my spouse wants and needs more than mine, will end up regularly, end up in a relationship that someone no doubt knows that they are cared for and loved. When you consistently set aside the things that you want, needs may get in there a little bit. You're saying it's more valuable to ensure that my spouse has their wants and needs met to the best of my ability. There's a caveat to that. Like, I'm not saying that your marriage should be one where you never get anything that you want. I guess I would say you get out of relationships what you give to them. If it sounds like the golden rule, right? Like, if you want people to treat you a certain way, how about you give that and see what happens? So that's how I see selflessness and humility play out in our marriage.
I'm curious, is that something that you kind of had an idea about going into marriage? Is that something you were like blindsided by year one, where you're all of a sudden like, uh-oh? What did that process look like of like discovering that?
Yeah. You know, as you get into a long-term relationship, I think you start to discover some of the things that make each other tick. So my wife will laugh about this, I hope.
Key one, laughter. Yeah.
I'm the clean freak of our relationship. Now, she's already on the other side listening to this saying, don't you dare. let me state it correctly. I am the neat freak, not the clean freak. So am I really ever going around dusting and vacuuming, cleaning windows? No. I'll sometimes do that of my own choosing. It'll often just be a Carrie asking me, hey, can you clean the windows? Or, hey, can you do this thing? Oh, yeah, sure. The neat freak in me wants to see, like, everything has a place in our home. Like, things randomly strewn about the house. Don't get a dog and don't have kids, by the way. like, there's a place for all these things.
I'm just going to clip that little clip and just post that on social. But, yeah.
my selflessness and humility comes into play when I come home and I say, I'm okay with things not having a place right now. I want it for sure. But I'm not going to come in and express disappointment.
Yeah.
I'm not going to come in and start doing all that stuff, huffing and puffing around like this should have been this way, you know?
Yeah.
And it's not to say that my wife is not a clean freak. She loves a clean house.
Yeah.
That is hard to do when you have three kids and a dog and, you know, a house any bigger than 1,000 square feet. Think heavens for Wisconsin basements where you can shut a door and say, I don't care about all that square footage for now. Closets are really great for that as well.
You know, it's super,
clean house.
It's super interesting. I think you look at this concept of like balancing your own wants and needs with trying to provide for the wants and needs of your partner. And like you mentioned that, oh yeah, like I mean, there is some that you get back. I think an important thing that is helpful to remember is there's like an appropriate amount that you want to advocate for yourself, because you want your partner to advocate for themselves so that you know how to love them well, right? Like you want to know what Carrie needs from you so that you're loving her to the best of your ability. Like, you need to know, and she need, and in the same respect, if you need to know that from her, then she needs to know that from you, right? And so yeah. It is this picture of this partnership where you advocate for yourself appropriately so the other person can love you well. Not so like in a vacuum, you're focusing on yourself. There's like a nuance there, I think, that's kind of tricky, right?
Yeah.
But I do think that the default for people is probably one of the two, where you're either really good about sharing what you want and need, or you really struggle with it. And, you know, I do think that comes back to a lot of conversation, but,
Yeah. It's hard to live up to somebody's expectation that they've not communicated.
Yeah.
So those are definitely good conversations. Like, so many of the things that you take into a marriage that you might be used to and don't even notice. And then you just kind of expect to see, you know, those definitely take some communication. And are they things that you should continue to see? Habits that continue to carry into your home that maybe you saw as you were growing up, that your spouse may not just have that same experience and bring that same quality. I think you have to establish a new normal, a new you within your marriage that this is what is good and healthy for us. Not what you can learn from other examples, but every marriage is going to be different. And yeah, communication is a big deal on that front. Not going to act like I have that all figured out. I think, you know, as humans, to say we mess up, you know, we are inherently selfish. We have to be really intentional to work toward caring about others to the extent that a marriage deserves. That takes a lot of hard work to deny yourself and put the people you are closest with and love the most, your immediate family, above yourself consistently, day in and day out. That takes a lot of humility and takes a lot of learning. Don't want to give some, you know, false hope. There's an element of being content in that stuff, striving toward those things. There's never going to be an arrival on that, I don't think.
Yeah,
we're lifelong learners in everything that we do. I'm going to be better learning how to love my wife until we die. Yeah. Like, there's never going to come a time where I have this selflessness and humility fully figured out. I'm just going to work it as best I can until I die, and hope that I've done a good job with that.
How much of that process, Evan, for you was almost like discovering in yourself the things that you needed and wanted so that you could almost release some of those or advocate for them, right? Yeah. Was that a part of that process for you?
Yeah, I think the more you understand yourself as an individual, like the things that make you tick and are like motivating drivers within you, kind of like what you're talking about, allows you to communicate that well, like the things I have a propensity toward. And then understanding yourself better allows you to discover how can I bring out the best in my spouse. You know, based on my personality shaping, discovering what their personality shaping is and how do those two shapes, you know, work together. There's definitely a lot of discovering to do. I will say, like, I think our marriage has gotten better upon me knowing myself more, like being more self-aware, reading the right books, reading more about what I think my personality shaping is, and knowing, like I referred to the unhealthy version of an Enneagram too. I feel like I have an awareness of when I know I'm being unhealthy. And so I find those, like, when I get that feeling of, I know better than you do what you need, or like getting into this, like, Mr. Fix-It mode. Sometimes I just need to be a good listener and have no action associated with that. And then lo and behold, finding out being a good listener is a really good action sometimes.
Yeah. How much does that, like, finding out about yourself play into that final word you mentioned of, like, intentionality?
Yeah. I'll put it this way. Say the question again.
That's an interesting way to put it. No. So how much does that concept of, like, learning more about yourself, does that play into that concept of intentionality, or is intentionality, do you feel like that's something different altogether?
I'll say this phrase, no one is going to advocate for you but you. If you want to get better and if you want to be healthier, there's no one coming to the rescue on your unhealthy traits. The rescue will be someone losing it on you. Just being like, I've had enough. This thing that you're doing is toxic to me. The people that love you the most are going to give you the most room to discover that until they just can't do it anymore. So self-awareness, you have to be intentional to discover that in yourself. If someone's going to hand you a book because they think they have your personality figured out, man, they're going to have to hold back their passive aggressiveness to say, you need to read this.
Which, of, like, course, everybody would love to be handed a book aggressively.
But like, there's not somebody just waiting in the wings coming to tell you, these are the things that you need to work on to become a better version of yourself. Put in the hard work and do self-discovery, and you'll probably find the things that will make you a healthier version of yourself for your spouse, for others in your life.
Yeah. That's really good.
So this is a plug for, you know, reading The Road Back to You, you know, your best Enneagram books.
Okay, so that final word, intentionality. Like, when you think of that, like, where does that come from? What does that look like?
Yeah. Well, we were talking about maybe we'd share some resources.
Yeah.
Just if people are looking for ways to be intentional, to dig into their marriage. When we lived in Indianapolis, we did this marriage course at our church called Grace Marriage. And like any good church curriculum, it had some lame factors to it.
There's your warning.
Yeah. It's a prerequisite. All church marriage curriculums is going to have some lame, weird stuff to it. Embrace it. Just go along. It's fine. There's going to be great content in there. I think one of the key words in this curriculum that we did over a long period of time was intentionality. And the biggest thing that I gained from it was, you know, you'd work through some things in these workbooks alongside some other guys, and then with your spouse. And so for gals, you'd work alongside it with some other gals in discussion and whatnot. And it forced us to ask questions of each other and answer them for each other, questions that I'm not sure we would have dug as deep into if it wouldn't have been for us saying, let's be proactive. Like, we're not, you know, alarms aren't going off in our marriage, but this sounds like a really great thing to do. And that intentionality led to the intentionality of answering these questions of each other. Like, what are your, you know, we've gone out and done a lot of things together. This is just for example, like, what are your favorite things that you like to do with me? Like, what are the favorite things that we do together? And there were some similarities on our lists. And there were some things on each of our lists that you noticed we knew each other based on, I'd love to do this thing with you because I know how much you like it. And vice versa. And the practice at the end of that was, what are the dates that you're going to do three of these things? Pick three of them and you're going to do them. Like that intentionality was really, really great for us. You know, we'll also be intentional talking to marriages with young kids. You know, taking care of your kids is a really sad excuse of continuing to date your spouse. It's not the best medium by which you continue your relationship is taking care of your kids together. Carrie and I really like to be intentional, and I'm feeling convicted right now in this conversation because I don't think we've done it as often lately to continue to date and to it's expensive a night to get a babysitter and go do something together to go to get a meal. Like for us, you're definitely talking about north of $100 for that. Like babysitters, pay them well. They're taking care of your kids. You know how much they suck. Pay them well.
It's probably like a substitute teacher.
Yeah. Yeah. Be intentional to go out on dates together, do some of the things that you love to do together, whatever that looks like. And I'm convicting myself when I say that, because, I think we're due, Carrie and I, for one of those. And don't always wait for the other person to do it, to prompt it. Be proactive, prompt it yourself. Say, hey, two Fridays from now, is there anything on the schedule? Good, because we're going out.
I love that. I think that's some really great, just like practical stuff that I think can be super helpful and is not easy. It is challenging, you know, I think there's like there's some sacrifice to that, right? Of carving out the space and the money and, maybe in some aspects, like breaking a routine or a comfortability or something like that. Like, it'd be nice to just be able to sit on the couch and watch something or something like that, you know? And saying no, like this is important. And carving out the space and showcasing with your time and your resources, that's important to you.
Yeah. Totally.
Well, Evan, thank you so much for chatting with me and sharing. And I think a really cool look at just how can you practice, how can you learn stuff and experiences and really share what you've learning and experienced. I think like nobody that I've ever spoken to on the topic of marriage has ever been like, yeah, we got to figure it out. We are 100%. We just are so excited to share because we've mastered this skill of marriage. And no, they're always like, we're by no means experts. We have no means have a perfect marriage. That's what everybody says. And but at the same time, you do got a lot of wisdom and helpful thoughts and perspective to share. And so thanks for doing that. And like you mentioned some resources, we'll be sure to put them in the show notes. If you head over to our resource page for this series that we're in, it's full of some really great resources that we have. So check it out. Thanks again, Evan.
You bet.
Well, that was my conversation with Evan. I just want to invite all of you, go to our resource page where you can find so many great resources on marriage and the other relationships in your life. You can find all of that at theridgecc.com/relationships-on-purpose. Thanks for listening to this episode of The Ridge Podcast. And make sure to follow and subscribe so that you don't miss any hopeful and helpful conversations.